You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Did you call game? I called game.
Gilbert, fade away.
And we are back for another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben Standa here. I am still coming to you from the Verizon Center after the Wizards practiced on Tuesday. If you have already listened to the John Wall-themed podcast I put up earlier today, you will know why, but what's going on here, I guess I should say, with the podcast. But either way, let me kind of set the stage here. Rather than put up a whole bunch of things into one podcast, I decided to break things up into sort of three themed podcasts about the Wizards over the next, 10, 12 hours or so, whatever that may be. I already have put up a John Wall themed podcast that had to do with the new-to-me relationship, at least, with former NBA player Steven Jackson, who was at Game 4. If you guys saw on Twitter, if you followed me on Twitter that night, either at Ben Standa or at Locked On Wizards, you probably saw the picture that I tweeted out of Steven Jackson in the John Wall jersey. But I did catch up with him. I played a little bit of that for you. And then today, at today's practice, John Wall was asked about that, about Jackson, who he calls a big brother. So just some to hear from them about it, but also some thoughts from me as to what's interesting about this relationship and what it kind of says about John Wall, his game and his vibe. Plus, I also had some quick thoughts about today's practice. So that is up there. Later, I'm going to do another one where I spoke at length with Washington Post columnist Jerry Brewer about Otto Porter. He put up a really good Otto Porter column this week, so talked about that, and I may dive into some Georgetown topics as well while we're on that Georgetown player. And then here, it's going to be about Markieff Morris. You're going to hear a bunch from Markieff Morris, some from today, some from after Game 4, John Wall's take on what Markieff Morris does, and then I did also a conversation with the great Glenn Consor that has to do with Markieff Morris. So that's all going to be on this podcast here, and I guess just to also set as a quick reminder, I did a podcast at length with Mike Wise from ESPN's The Undefeated about the Wizards-Celtics series. He thinks the Celtics are fraudulent. He sees the Wizards not only winning the series, but really competing with Cleveland. Mike Wise has lots of opinions, so check that out. And then, of course, if you missed it after Game 4, Todd Dybas and I did our usual breakdown of that series of that game, the series, where things are going from here. But let's get into the Markieff Morris situation. And you know what? Look, if we're going to rank the players on the Wizards based on, whatever you want to rank them, talent, importance, value, I don't know, whatever it is. John Wall and Bradley Beal are obviously going to be very high on the list. That's not exactly breaking news to say that. But Markieff Morris, it has been proven, or it's been shown, or however you want to phrase it, that Markieff Morris is incredibly valuable for the Wizards. In the Atlanta series, when he was able to hold his own and then some against Paul Millsap, the Wizards got it done. When he got into foul trouble, which did happen a lot in that series, that's when Paul Millsap was typically at his best, and that's when Atlanta often gave the Wizards fits. And we've seen the same thing essentially here. Probably the worst game for the Wizards against the Celtics was that game one, even though they got off to a pretty good start, as they have in most of the games this series. But then what happened? Markieff Morris gets the ankle injury in the first half, leaves the game, and starting that third quarter, Boston basically just blew the Wizards out and kind of took off from there. He's a very hard player to replace based on what they have out on the court. A big man who can not only bang inside because he's got enough size and attitude to do it, but also agile enough to get out on the perimeter to defend a three-point arc. And also off from the offensive standpoint, he can score a little bit. We've definitely seen that. I wouldn't say you're not counting on him to make three-pointers, but he's, for the most part this year, has been able to do that and do it at a pretty high level. So if teams leave him alone, he burns them. He's been, his passing has been super underrated, by me at least, this year. And maybe most of all, above everything else I just said, he gives them attitude. They are not going to be the Wizards are not going to be intimidated as long as Markieff Morris is out there on the court. And that's something that I talked that we asked John Wall about today. This is Markieff Morris's first postseason. And I wanted John Wall's take on how he thinks the Wizards starting power forward has handled that scene both on the court and then off the court. This is Markieff's first playoff appearance. How would you say he's handled it? It seems like he's embracing both the on-court action as well as the post-game conversation.
He's great. That's what he is. That's what he is. He's the enforcer of our team. So nothing's going to phase him. Whatever you say, whatever you do, ain't going to bother him.
It's important to have a guy like that going up into the situation now where...
You definitely need a guy like that on every team. I think everybody has one of those guys, and you need it. And for him to be in his first playoff series, he don't get phased by the moment. He just go out there and play his game and do whatever we need him to do.
And, all right, there we go. John Wall from today's practice. And, you know, he's, as best I can tell, I think he's right that Markieff Morris does not get phased. I mean, Markieff Morris simply has an edge at all times, it would appear. You know, I always preface by saying I don't know what guys are like off the court or when they're out of my world, right? But I've never had a conversation with Markieff Morris where it didn't always feel like, not that he was going to be violent or anything like that, but like that edge exists. He's always at a 7 or an 8. He's always ready to go. And that's also evident by how he, the way he talks with us at times. He's been obviously a tremendous quote all year. I think we've all had a lot of fun listening to his take on things. And today was another example of that. Here's what I asked Markieff Morris at practice today. And actually, before I do that, actually, let me back that up for a second. Let me explain what I was asking here. What I was asking was that I noticed that I was looking at net rating, so points per 100 possession for an individual player, you know, combination of points for, points against, net rating, any NBA player in the playoffs with at least 20 minutes of playing time. Here's the top five in the league. Stephen Curry, Golden State Warriors, 25.1. Draymond Green, Golden State Warriors, 21.5. Klay Thompson, Golden State Warriors, 20.5. Number five on the list, Kevin Durant, 17.4. But number four on the list, Markieff Morris, 17.9. The Wizards have simply been better when he's on the court. And there's a lot of different factors to that. He probably doesn't play with the second unit as much in the playoffs as he did during the regular season. And that probably helps. He's not out there as much as maybe they're having some dips. But I think the larger point is it goes to show just not only how effective he's been in these playoffs, but just how important he's been for this team. And it also goes back to the point that there were people who were not fans of that trade. There were people who even earlier this year were discounting Markieff Morris's ability and presence. And that's kind of what I was going for here when I asked him this question.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun together.
There was a storyline earlier in the year. You noticed that there was one article that had ranked power forward in the league and didn't have you in the top 30 or whatever it was. You're now in these playoffs, depending on which numbers you look at, one of the most efficient players of any for any team in the postseason. How much do you think that has this spotlight, I know it's about the team, but has this spotlight kind of helped show the league kind of what you're all about?
I mean, I've been in the league for 5 years. In all 5 years I've produced, I mean, to not be in the top 30 was disrespectful. Whoever those guys were wrote that, some assholes don't know anything about basketball and never watched basketball in their life if you don't rank me in the top 30. And, it is what it is, man. I'm just excited about the team, about the new chance we got now, and then I'll get the job done in Boston tomorrow.
I guess just the fact that with the playoffs, you know, typically one game on at a time that everybody's kind of watching. I mean, obviously, again, it is about the team and showing what you guys do as a team. But I know for you, you know, from what happened in Phoenix to come here to sort of give the opportunity to say, hey, whatever you guys think, this is what I'm doing out here.
Like I said, man, whoever wrote that is an asshole, man, and doesn't watch basketball, obviously, you know. But, you know, we passed that. At the time, it gave me motivation. Now, you know, we're in it together, and we're just trying to get this victory.
Which match?
All right. So that was, again, from today's practice, Markieff Morris. The second time I brought up, I wasn't trying to focus on the Bleacher Report article per se. It was just sort of my larger point was, here's a guy who I think a lot of people, you know, especially if you only really paid attention to what happened in Phoenix and only view the Wizards as John Wall and Bradley Beal, maybe not have not appreciated what Markieff Morris is doing, and has, you know, did these playoffs, have these playoffs given him an opportunity to show more? But that's fine. He went back to the Bleacher Report article again. I brought it up the first time. It's all good. All right, now let's go back to where to after game four. I mentioned this on the Mike Wise podcast a little bit. We talked about what Markieff Morris said to a small group of us that stayed behind to chat with him. After that, here's what Markieff Morris had to say after game four.
If you guys win one more playoff game, that would be as far as any team has been in 40 years in the playoffs in D.C. is.
Yeah.
I know you don't, you know, you don't think about that, but it's, but to me, it just feels like the city's really just dying for a basketball winner. Do you feel that?
You can kind of feel it a little bit at the games, man. Mm-hmm. You know, they deserve it, man. They deserve, you know, for it to be 40 years, they deserve something like this to happen. And we just trying to give it to them. You know, we feeding off their energy every time we play in here, man. It's unbelievable home court advantage.
10 games into your first postseason, what's your biggest takeaway?
This shit just like the regular season. It's nothing different.
Nothing?
Nothing different, except you playing guys six straight times or five straight times. That's it.
How does that change anything?
Easier to study. You know what I mean? You just keep studying the same guys, same players, you know what I mean? It's easier.
Does that include, like, when you're, like, in the last series, like, and you kind of, you know, went Millsap verbally a couple times that after the game stuff, then you have to see him again? Is that one of those things where it's different than the regular season, or maybe you don't have to see that guy for a couple months?
The same. You're just trying to input and just trying to put something in their head, you know, remember you from the last game. You know what I mean? Got that from KG.
What's going through?
Put something in their head. Markieff Morris has definitely been doing that, or certainly has been trying to do that, not just in these playoffs, all season. He's a talker out there. He's clearly not afraid to say what's on his mind, which we definitely appreciate. I assume you guys do as well. And it seems like his teammates have no issue either. They are, he, you know, he talks the talk, he walks the walk. And you know, it's been interesting to see him play at that, like I said, that with that edge at all times, and going up to game five, where you know the Celtics crowd is going to be wilder than ever. They're going to need that type of attitude to make sure that this team, no matter what happens out there on the court, or maybe even what's said, yelled their way from the crowd, that they know that they believe that they can get this job done, and they're not going to get intimidated. And I don't think you're going to get intimidated with Markieff Morris out on the court. It's also interesting. I did wonder, part of the reason why I asked that specific thing about Millsap was I wondered if he took that as a lesson, and maybe it's not. Maybe it is exactly what he just said. No matter what the circumstances is, he's going to talk a certain way. But I did kind of wonder if in that Atlanta series where he calls Millsap a crybaby and said some other things, was that an example of, hey, he's doing what he would have done during the regular season, except this time you're seeing the guy the next day or, you know, 2 days later. Does that change anything? I guess not. I guess he is still, he is who he is. He is Markieff Morris. He's certainly not Marcus Morris. He was asked about that as well and said he actually didn't really like that people were suggesting that that there was even a chance that they would swap one in for the other. And he made the point of saying, hey, I'm about 10 pounds bigger than Marcus, and he's quicker and more agile than I am. So, you know, you should be able to tell us, you know, people should be able to tell us apart. And I think for trip basketball types that are watching all the time, sure. But I think if you're watching it from the crowd from a distance, or you only see them occasionally, they look like the same guy, especially with the tattoos. They have identical tattoos seemingly all over the, you know. So interesting stuff on that end. Anyway, one more thing here on Markieff Morris. I caught up with the great Glenn Consor, part of the radio Wizards radio party, each and every game. Caught up with him before game four, and we did again focus on the power forward, Markieff Morris. All right. Still talking ahead of game four. I had a chance here to get Mr. Glenn Consor, and you don't pass up those opportunities. So, Glenn, let's talk a bit, since we're going to do this after the game.
and Danny Ainge just walked by. We won't talk about game four, but let's talk about some broader topic stuff. You know, the Markieff Morris situation, I think, has been a fascinating one for me since the moment they acquired him. It was a controversial move for a lot of people because they focused on what he was doing, what happened with the Phoenix situation, whether they only saw the headlines or not. And then you get here, and, you know, his play at times has been up and down. Not everybody, sometimes the rebounding numbers haven't always been there. But this season, obviously, for the most part, he's been much more of an all-around threat. His three-point shooting's been better. But the one thing he's provided from day one has been attitude. And I mean that in a positive sense. He hasn't let it, for the most part, get out of hand the way Kelly Oubre did in game three. He's kept that in there. But it's been very important. And when he's been in foul trouble or got injured in game one and he's been off the court, you can see the Wizards don't have that element. From your perspective as a guy who's played basketball at a high level to covering these teams, how much has that factor been important for this team? And was that something you think maybe was they were perhaps missing on some of those earlier playoff teams?
Yeah, you know, first of all, I think what Keith has brought to this team, I don't think anybody really expected. His overall play, his ability to pass the ball, set screens, his leadership, his character has been, you know, unmatched. I mean, I didn't think, I thought he was more of a, you know, power forward who can step out a little bit in the mid-range and make shots. But his passing has really impressed me. He's a great teammate. You know, he backs up his teammates. He's great in the locker room. So from a leadership standpoint, he's been so impressive to me. Let's face it, when he plays well, they win. When he stays out of foul trouble, they win. They need him on the floor because he's so valuable. Because he's also one of these guys that doesn't need the ball. You know, he's kind of like one of those glue-type guys that will give you what you need at specific times of the game. He's a better shooter than I thought he would be, much. He could bang in some threes here and there, but, you know, he could shoot the ball. Scott Brooks has a lot of confidence in him in shooting the ball. So, you know, they need him. I mean, he to me, he's got to be up there as, you know, in top 10 power forwards in the NBA this year. So I'm really impressed with his skill sets.
You know, I know some people, fans who wanted to, especially the kind of fans who, I'm not sure what, actually what your take on the Oubre situation was, but some fans viewed that as, hey, that was great. We'd show them we're not to be messed with. And it was a real turning point. I'm like, hey, they were already up 21 in the game. And even beyond that, they had played Boston even more or less the first two games until obviously things got out of hand late. But I thought Markieff coming back in game two, after he gets hurt in game one, you know, he said, you know, he wasn't sure whether Horford did that intentionally or not. I'm not going to say anything here, but he made a point of going up to Horford before game two. And then when they went for that loose ball, he kind of threw him down. That, to me, that was a tone-setting moment. Now, even though they did lose that game, they were up still. You know, they're up six with two and change to go, so they were almost there. But that to me was a tone setting moment, and the type of thing that's sort of what I'm talking about. Like, fine, it's one thing to say you want to be tough, but
yeah,
he gives them that in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I also think a tone setting moment in that game was when John dove on the ball early on a loose ball, kicked it out to Bradley, made the three. That was one of those I thought a statement type hustle plays. But Keith makes those plays too. You know, he could set the tone. And the whole thing with Oubre, let's face it, you know, this team needs him. You have to keep your cool. You can't let a game get away from you because of technical fouls. And it stops the momentum. Wizards had great momentum. Then, you know, all the technical fouls started coming in. The game was tight. All that stuff doesn't help the Wizards. It hurts the Wizards when you have a 20-point lead. So he lost his cool. He lost it. There's no maybes to it. He's young, and I think he learned from it.
Do you have? Are you wearing your Death Row DC T-shirt underneath your nice outfit here today, or do you have it at home that you only like wear it when nobody's watching?
Yeah, I it's pajamas. I wear them to sleep at night.
You know, to be honest, I have a lot of almost three quarters of my T-shirt drawer are things I can't wear out in public anymore because they're either things from when I was younger, or when I was part of rooting for a team, or somebody gives me something on the side at some media day event. Right. I'm like, oh, great, but now I can't ever wear this again. So I can definitely appreciate your pajama joke. Hey, there's 100 more things to talk about, but you got things to do. And, like I said, we're doing this before game four. So appreciate your time, man, and we'll talk later.
Keith needs a big game. He needs a big game. Everybody's got to play well.
Absolutely. Glenn, appreciate it, man. Right. Thank you.
All right, there you have it. Glenn, thoughts from Glenn Contour on Markieff Morris. Yeah, I mean, look, there are times when, you know, Markieff Morris, his rebounding numbers do fade away. He's got to stay out of foul trouble. He's done better at that job in this series, I think largely because instead of going up against Paul Millsap, he's been going up against that, as what Todd Dybas called, the Gerald Johnson player in that, whether it's Gerald Green or Amir Johnson, they're not getting much out of that spot. So he's had more of a free reign this series, and he's taken advantage of it, you know, for the most part, with some productive play. They're going to need more of that, of course, in Game 5 and beyond if they're going to continue to advance in the postseason. And I'll tell you what, one of the things there'll be an interesting conversation to see as these playoffs progress. We've talked all year about the idea of Otto Porter. Is it, can he be that third guy? Is he the guy who gets that max contract? Now, his contract comes up first. He's a restricted free agent this year. Markieff Morris, the Wizards have got him going, not just for next year, 2017-18, but 18-19. So that's good for them. But, you know, I wouldn't say that you would look at Markieff Morris as part of a big three with Wall and Beal, and I wouldn't say you would with Otto Porter either, truly, at this point. But again, when you look at all the factors and the value that he's bringing to this team, the importance that he is, we already talked about the net rating, but you can see it out there on the court in a lot of different ways. You know, it's interesting to view it as, where does Markieff Morris stack if we're viewing the Wizards in a big three? If they're forced to make a big three, can we make the argument that really it's Markieff Morris is that third guy? More than anybody else, no disrespect to Otto Porter, John Wall, or Otto Porter, Marcin Gortat, or anybody else, but you know, on a lot of levels, Markieff Morris is that he's at least a third most indispensable player on the team after Wall and Beal. I'm not sure we can even argue that at this point. In any event, thank you guys for listening here. Again, go back and check out the John Wall-themed podcast, as well as the Mike Wise interview and the recap from Game 4 with Todd Dybas. An Otto Porter-themed pod will come up here shortly as well. Until then, until next time, see ya.
Beal gets open for three. Dagger!
Bobby Sy caught. Home drive, off balance shot.